It is time for Appraise This. Appraise This, I say. With Tim, Luke, and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack. You can find them at tqag.com, but you can also find them right here on Robinhood Radio on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, our fellow broadcasters.
Good morning. Well, Tim is I'm flying solo. However, I have a very special guest. Tim is on his way to Fort Lauderdale to do an appraisal. So you're stuck with me again.
That's okay, but before you get your guest, Jill has something for you.
Oh, yeah. Yes? Okay.
All right, so I was doing my usual, and I came across a book which I just ordered, and I did order it for you, but I might just tell you to get your own copy. And it is called The Museum. You know, I'm an Indian giver from way back. Yep. And most people don't know what that is, so they probably, long short. It is called The Museum of Lost Art. It's by a guy named Noah Charney, and it is just so up your alley because it is broken down into categories, you know, theft, war, accident, acts of God, destroyed by owner, buried and exhumed, lost or never was, and conclusion, lost is just another word for waiting to be found. And given...
Well, this is right up my alley.
It absolutely is. So I just want you to know that it exists, and while I have not yet determined its ultimate disposition, I suspect it will be coming your way.
Well, thank you. That's great. Because, you know, I love that kind of stuff. So that's really great.
That is the reason that's what started it, because it's just broken down, and it's also got, as books like this should have, it has actual pictures of the art and what it's meant to look like and what is alleged to have happened to it and where it is and who cut it into little pieces, etc.
That's one of my favorite words, alleged. In our business, we use it all the time, alleged.
It's mate, its cousin is plausible. So now for your special guest.
Yeah, well, just very quickly before I introduce her, I just want to let everybody, Tim was away this week. He just got back from Julian's out in L.A., and there were some really amazing things that sold. The blaster from Return of the Jedi was estimated at $300,000 to $500,000, and it sold for $550,000. And Fonzie's Triumph, the motorcycle from Happy Days, it was at $150,000 to $200,000, and it sold for $179,000, right in the mean of the estimate, which is what we like to see as auctioneers. And then, of course, one of the other famous iconic pieces of Hollywood memorabilia, Charlie Chaplin's cane, was estimated at $4,000 to $6,000, and it sold at $16,000. And one of the really amazing pieces of Presley memorabilia, his 1970 Mercedes 280 SL, it was estimated at $150,000 to $200,000, and it sold for a whopping $187,000. So, but I think the biggest surprise for me was the Superman 3 costume worn by Christopher Reeves in the movie. It was estimated at $20,000 to $40,000, and it sold for $200,000. So even after all these years, some of these things, this is the definition of a true collectible. And these things, there's just no way of putting a cap on what these things are going to be worth in the future. So,
right, and I think it's important to point out right here and right now that you know what you need are two people who want it.
Well, that's
I know that sounds stupid.
With everything, it's true, especially an auction.
Yeah,
only takes two people because I was bidding on one piece. Tim and I were bidding on a Rock Hudson photograph, and we thought we were going to get it, and it ended up selling for like $1,700 or $1,800. So, and we weren't even in the running at that point. So it ended up being between those two people who wanted it more than the other one. And it's a matter of who can stare who down the longest or who can, you know, just keep raising their paddle. So, and that's the beauty of auction, baby. That's the beauty of auction. So, but it was a great weekend, a fun weekend, and a good auction to watch. But to our special guest, we have known her name is Kristen Byram, and she is the director of the museum, the Mansion Museum at Ogilby Institute in Wheeling, West Virginia, for the past 15 years. And we go there every year, and this year they decided to come down and spend some time, and so I thought it would be fun to have her on and get her perspective on what should I do with grandma's wedding dress. So, and you know, like accession and deaccession, these are the, you know, like the top three things to know about when you're donating artifacts to a museum, because she's seen and heard it all. So without further ado, welcome Kristen.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning. So what are you going to tell us about?
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about when people have items that they want to donate to museums and the process and how to go about that to make it very smooth and painless for everybody involved.
All right. Just one second before you start. Not a lot of people know instantly about donating to museums. So first and foremost, how do you put that on your list of, you know, you're looking at something and you go, how do you know what qualifies?
Well, and that's a very good question, because the answer is different for every museum, because every museum collects different things. If we all collected, you know, the same things, we'd have warehouses and warehouses full of things. And so museums are, they're very focused in their collections. They actually have written policies about what they will and will not accept into a collection and the reasons for that. So Greg and I, you know, we've been talking about this and that, you know, one of the first things, well, the first thing I would say overarchingly and very importantly is that museums, we love our donors, because, you know, we'd rely very heavily on the generosity and forethought of individuals in that way, because a lot of museums, especially smaller, locally focused museums like the one I'm with, we simply don't have the resources to go out and purchase items for the collection.
Right.
So we do rely very much on people's generosity. And so I'd say the number one thing is have the conversation. Open up the conversation with your museum or your local museum or who you think might be interested or where you think your object might find a good home and fit.
Now, this is this presumes that there's enough awareness of how things get from one place to another, which sadly, you know, just a bunch of TV and top line headlines have you know, it's fine for people who are in that business, not so fine for people who are trying to figure it out along the way. So,
yeah, so,
yeah, exactly.
And look, you know, you work closely, you know, you build your networks in your community, the smaller museums do. And so, you know, we know people you know, estate attorneys and things that can help guide people our way, you know, if they have items. But we like to have the conversation before it gets to a point, you know, oftentimes things we'll get a phone call from an attorney saying, you know, Mrs. Smith has passed and you're written into her will and this is what you're getting. And it may or it may not be something that will fit within our collection parameters. And so, you know, we have to go through the process of, if it doesn't, finding the appropriate home for it. And it makes things go a lot more smoothly if we have that conversation at the beginning of the process. You know, another thing is, please don't be offended if something isn't accepted into a museum's collection, because it certainly is not a reflection on you or on the object or on the quality of the object. It may simply be that it just doesn't fit within the particular parameters of that museum.
See, I think I think one thing that's very important to mention here too is that every museum has a mission and a mission statement. And, you know, if you have a motorboat and you want to donate it to a museum that only has Japanese woodblock prints, then that's not really a fit. So, I mean, everything in everything is mission driven.
Right. And I'm, yes, bluntly, I'm more concerned about people who don't even think that, wow, this should be donated to a museum, or this could be donated to a museum.
Well, I will tell you from our experience as appraisers, you would be surprised how many people actually believe that their items are worthy of being in a museum. So it's
absolutely
it is there, and there is the awareness. It's just on how to take the next step, because a lot of times we've discovered that people, as you know, they put unrealistic expectations on what their mother or their grandmother's items are worth, because they've been told the old story. Well, you know, this came over on the Mayflower, and we've come to find out that it came over on the Mayflower moving van. So, the other thing that museums have to manage the expectations of the donors. So that's another thing that Kristen has to deal with on a daily basis.
But do the donors?
Yes, very much so. Yes.
We have about a minute. We have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left. So
and so, what I'm trying to figure out is, do the donors traditionally let you know? Do they know to let you know ahead of time that this is something? I'm not talking obviously about huge things, but do they know to let you know ahead of time?
Well, it depends. Some do, some don't. I mean, I'd say it's almost about 50-50. But we definitely, I would say that we are contacted at a minimum on a weekly basis, several times a week, with people who have things that they would like to see in the museum. And so, yeah, we do. We do get people contacting us quite frequently. Interesting that that's your take on it, because I would say from experience that it's the opposite. It's dealing with the calls that come in about having that interest.
Right.
Well, I think one of the things, just very quickly before we have to go, because we could talk for hours on this subject because we've all been there. But one of the biggest questions, and I know that this happens with Kristen a lot, is, well, I brought my friends in to see this piece that I donated to the museum, but where is it? I don't see it. It's not up on permanent collection for the entire world to see. Well, it's, you know, that's just because, you know, it might not be. It could be collection centric. It might be something that might come up when they do a certain type of item as they change exhibitions, or it, you know, just because it's in the permanent collection doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be up permanently.
Yeah.
Right. So
I guess one word that would call that before we is rotation of your,
yes,
of your,
exactly,
displays.
In actuality, the larger percentage of a museum's collection at any given time is in storage and not on display.
All
and
right.
that's for the good of the object. Objects need to rest just like people do. They need to need to get away from the world and from light and temperature fluctuation, and so it's for their own good when they're not on display.
All so right, well, Greg, bring your special guest back another time, will you? Because this is quite interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. But just very quickly,
gotta go.
Her husband Kurt and I are on our way out to the links. I'm all ready. I have my golf shoes on. And we are on our way.
Well, whatever the equivalent of tight lines to a golfer is.
Four.
Oh, that's, yeah, it. Okay, great.
Have a great
Thank
day,
you
guys.
Very much.
Have a great
Thank
week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This, TQAG.com on the web.